welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps, episode 10. This is part 2 of Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. I am Dune. Well, we now have a Facebook fan group, so I don't want to brag, but that makes it pretty official. Even though I started the group, so it's not really a fan group as much as shameless self-promotion. But seriously, guys, my mom is on the group, so no cursing at all, okay? She has delicate sensibilities. No N-bombs. Okay, yeah. All right. Anyway, where we left off in Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, I guess there's this kid named Gabe who's just spoiled and annoying, and he gets to go to Egypt on vacation, and his family left him to go sell air conditioners, maybe? And he's with his Uncle Ben, not the black guy from the rice box, but his Uncle Ben, and his cousin, Sari. She's always trying to outdo him, thinks she's so much better than him. And they were in the Great Pyramid, and because Uncle Ben's an archaeologist, and he discovered new parts of the pyramid. God, his life's so much cooler than mine. Anyway, so now they got kidnapped by some spooky Arab. So let's see how this. Oh wait. Sorry, fuck. Then they got kidnapped, and then they got lost because they got away from being kidnapped. So now they're stuck in Egypt in the back of a cab. They don't know where they are, and they said, "Let's go back to the hotel. You know, let's get out of here." And cab driver just laughed at them. So here we are, chapter 10 of Curse of the Mummy's Tomb on Dune Reads Goosebumps. The driver laughed till tears formed in the corners of his eyes. Sari grabbed my arm. "He's working for Ahmed," she whispered, squeezing my wrist. "We've walked right into a trap." "Huh?" I felt a stab of fear in my chest. I didn't think she was right. She couldn't be right. But I didn't know what else to think. I grabbed the door handle and started to leap out of the taxi, but the driver raised a hand, signaling for me to stop. "Gabe, go!" Sari pushed me hard from behind. "Cairo Center Hotel?" the driver asked suddenly, wiping the tears from his eyes with a finger. Then he pointed through the windshield. "Cairo Center Hotel?" Sari and I both followed his finger. There was the hotel, right across the street. He started to laugh again, shaking his head. "Thanks," I shouted and climbed out. Sari scrambled out behind me, a wide, relieved smile on her face. "I don't think it's that funny," I told her. "The cab driver has a strange sense of humor." I turned back. The driver was still staring at us, a broad smile on his face. "Come on," she urged, tugging at my arm. "We have to tell Daddy about Ahmed." But to our surprise, our hotel room was empty. My note was still on the table where I'd left it. Nothing had been moved or touched. "He hasn't been back here," Sari said, picking up my note and crumpling it into a ball in her hand. "Ahmed lied. About everything." I flopped down on the couch with a loud sigh. "I wonder what's going on," I said unhappily. "I just don't get it." Sari and I both screamed as the door to the room flew open. "Daddy!" Sari cried, running to hug him. I was sure glad it was Uncle Ben and not Ahmed. "Daddy, the strangest thing," Sari started. Uncle Ben had his arm around her shoulder. As he led her across the room toward the couch, I could see that he had a really dazed expression on his face. "Yes, it's strange," he muttered, shaking his head. "Both of my workers." "Huh? Are they okay?" Sari asked. "No, not really," Uncle Ben replied, dropping onto the arm of the armchair, staring hard but not really focusing on me. "They're both in a state of shock. I guess that's how I'd describe it." "They were in an accident? In the pyramid?" I asked. "Wow, did you hear that weird breathing thing?" I keep coughing, it's horrible. Uncle Ben scratched the bald spot in the back of his head. "I don't really know, they can't talk, they're both speechless. I think something, or someone, frightened them, scared them speechless. The doctors are completely confused. They said that..." "Daddy, Ahmed tried to kidnap us!" Sari interrupted, squeezing his hand. "What? Ahmed?" He narrowed his eyes, his forehead wrinkling up in confusion. "What do you mean?" "Ahmed, the guy at the pyramid, the one who wears the white suits with the red bandana and always carries the clipboard," Sari explained. "He told us you sent him to get us. He said he came to the museum." "Museum?" Uncle Ben climbed to his feet. What were you doing at the museum? I told you we had to get out of here, Sari said, putting a hand on her dad's shoulder, trying to calm him. Gabe wanted to see mummies, so we went to the museum. But Ahmed came and took us to his car. He said he was taking us to the hotel. But he was driving the wrong way, I continued the story, so we jumped out and ran away. Ahmed, Uncle Ben kept repeating the name, as if he just couldn't believe it. He came to me with excellent credentials and references, he said. He's a cryptographer. He studies ancient Egyptian. He's mainly interested in the wall writings and symbols we uncover. So why did he come for us? I asked. Where was he going to take us? Sari asked. I don't know, Uncle Ben said, but I certainly intend to find out. Wow. I just read like 15 minutes of this out loud without pressing record, so awesome. Nice move, Dune. So, I forgot to explain what I'm drinking this time. I'm drinking a bottle of Wild Irish Rose and a Miller Lite. So, but I certainly intend to find out. He hugged Sari. What a mystery, he continued. You're both okay. Yeah, we're okay, I replied. I've got to get to the pyramid, he said, letting go of Sari and walking to the window. I gave my workers the day off, but I've got to get to the bottom of this. Clouds rolled over the sun. The room suddenly grew darker. I'll order up some room service for you, Uncle Ben said, a thoughtful expression on his face. Will you two be okay here till I get back tonight? No, Sari cried. You can't leave us here. Why can't we come with you? I asked. Yes, we're coming with you, Sari exclaimed, before Uncle Ben had a chance to reply. He shook his head. Too dangerous, he said, his eyes narrowing as he glanced first at me, then at Sari. Until I can find out what happened to my two workers in there. But Daddy, what if Ahmed comes back? Sari cried, sounding really frightened. What if he comes here? Uncle Ben scowled. Ahmed, he muttered. Ahmed. You can't leave us here, Sari repeated. Uncle Ben stared out the window at the darkening sky. I guess you're right, he said finally. I guess I have to take you with me. Yes, Sari and I both cried, relieved. But you have to promise to stick close, Uncle Ben said sternly, pointing a finger at Sari. I mean it. No wandering off. No more practical jokes. Also, as an aside, when I said I didn't record it, I didn't click record on the track. It's not like I just pulled this up and started reading, hoping that Windows would magically, put it onto the Cool Edit profile, which I think Windows 7 can do that, because, man, Windows 7's awesome. It's like Windows XP and Ubuntu without any of the horrible Vista features. Am I right? Oh, I'm right. I realized I was seeing a whole new side of my uncle. Even though he was a well-known scientist, he'd always been the jolly, practical joker of the family. But now he was worried. Fucking seriously worried. No more jokes until the frightening mystery was cleared up. We had sandwiches downstairs in the hotel restaurant, then drove through the desert to the pyramid. Heavy clouds rolled across the sun as we drove, casting shadows over the sand, coloring the desert darkly in shimmering shades of blue and gray. Before long, the enormous pyramid loomed on the horizon, appearing to grow larger as we approached the nearly empty highway. I remembered the first time I had seen it. Just a few days before, such an amazing sight, but now, watching it through the car windshield, I felt only dread. Uncle Ben parked the car near the low entrance he had discovered behind the pyramid. As we stepped out, the wind whipped at the ground, tossing the stand up, whirling it around our legs. Uncle Ben raised a hand to stop us at the tunnel entrance. Here, he said. He reached into his supply pack and pulled out equipment for Sari and me. Clip this on. He handed each of us a beeper. Just push the button, and it will beep me, he said, helping me clip mine to the belt on my jeans. It's like a homing device. If you push the button, it sends electronic signals to the unit I'm wearing. Then I can track you down by following the sound levels. Of course, I don't expect you to use it, because I expect you to stay close to me. He handed us flashlights, and he handed me a brand new fleshlight. He winked at me and said, "Yours is looking a bit worn." I blushed. "Watch your step," he instructed. "Keep the light down at your feet, a few yards ahead of you on the floor." "We know, Daddy," Sari said. "We've done this before, remember?" "Just follow instructions," he said sharply, and turned into the darkness of the pyramid opening. I stopped at the entrance and pulled out my little mummy hand, just to make sure I had it. "What are you doing with that?" Sari asked, making a face. "My good luck charm," I said, slipping it back into my pocket. She groaned and gave me a playful shove into the pyramid entrance. A few minutes later, we were once again making our way carefully down the long rope ladder and into the first narrow tunnel. Uncle Ben led the way, the wide circle of light from his flashlight sweeping back and forth across the tunnel ahead of him. Sari was a few steps behind him, and I walked a few steps behind her. The tunnel seemed narrower and lower this time. I guess it was just my mood. Gripping the flashlight tightly, keeping the light aimed down, I dipped my head to keep from hitting the low, curved ceiling. The tunnel bent to the left, then sloped downhill where it split in two paths. Someone's knocking on the door.
Hey.
No, I don't. I'm parked around there.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. No.
Bye, Lucy. Okay, bye.
It was my neighbor. She's a Hispanic American. She always yells at her cat outside and goes, "Gato, gato." Franklin doesn't like the cats. Alright. The tunnel bent to the left, then sloped downhill where it split into two paths. We followed the one to the right. The only sound was that of our shoes scraping against the sandy, dry floor. Uncle Ben coughed. Sari said something. I couldn't hear what it was. I had stopped to shine my light on a bunch of spiders on the ceiling, and the two of them had walked several yards ahead of me. Following my light as it moved over the floor, I saw that my sneaker had come untied once again. Oh man, not again! I stooped to tie it, setting the flashlight on the ground beside me. "Hey, wait up!" I called, but they had started to argue about something. I didn't think they heard me. I could hear their voices echoing loudly down the long, twisted tunnel, but I couldn't make out their words. I hurriedly double-knotted his shoelace, grabbed up the flashlight, and climbed to my feet. "Hey, wait up!" I shouted anxiously. Where had they gone? I realized that I couldn't hear their voices anymore. "This can't be happening to me again," I thought. "Hey!" I shouted, cupping my hands over my mouth. My voice echoed down the tunnel, but no voices called back. "Wait up!" Typical, I thought. They were so involved in their argument, they forgot all about me. I realized that I was more angry than frightened. Uncle Ben had made such a big deal about us sticking close together, and then he walked off, left me alone in the tunnel. "Hey, where are you?" I shouted. No reply. All right. Chapter 11 of Curse of the Mummy's Tomb. Beaming the light ahead of me on the floor, I ducked my head and began jogging, following the tunnel as it curved sharply to the right. The floor began to slope upwards. The air became hot and musty smelling. I found myself gasping for breath. "Uncle Ben!" I shouted. "Sorry!" They must be around the next curve in the tunnel, I told myself. It hadn't taken me long to tie my shoelace. They couldn't have gotten that far away. Hearing a sound, I stopped and listened. Silence now. Was I starting to hear things? I had a sudden flash. Was this another mean practical joke? Were Sari and Uncle Ben hiding, waiting to see what I'd do? Was this another lame trick of theirs to frighten me? It couldn't be. Uncle Ben, I knew, could never resist a practical joke. He had laughed like a hyena when Sari told him how she'd hidden the mummy case and scared about 10 years off my life. Were they both hiding in mummy cases now, just waiting for me to stumble by? My heart thumped in my chest. Despite the heat of the ancient tunnel, I felt cold all over. No, I decided, this isn't a practical joke. Uncle Ben was too serious today, too worried about his stricken workers, too worried about what we'd told him about Ahmed. He wasn't in the mood for practical jokes. I began making my way through the tunnel again. As I jogged, my hand brushed against the beeper at my waist. Should I push it? No, I decided. That would only give Sari a good laugh. She'd be eager to tell everyone how I'd started beeping for help after being in the pyramid for 2 minutes. I turned the corner. The tunnel walls seemed to close in on me as the tunnel narrowed. "Sari, Uncle Ben?" No echo. Maybe the tunnel was too narrow for an echo. The floor grew harder, less sandy. In the dim yellow light, I could see that the granite walls were lined with jagged cracks. They looked like dark lightning bolts coming down from the ceiling. "Hey, where are you guys?" I shouted. I stopped when the tunnel branched in two directions. Suddenly, I realized how scared I was. Where had they disappeared to? They had to have realized by now that I wasn't with them. I stared at the two openings, shining my light first onto one tunnel, then the other. Which one had they entered? Which one? My heart pounding. Bum, 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 bum. I ran into the tunnel on the left and shouted their names. No reply. I backed out quickly, my light darting wildly over the floor, and stepped into the tunnel on the right. The tunnel was wider and higher. It curved gently to the right. A maze of tunnels. That's how Uncle Bennett described the pyramid. Maybe thousands of tunnels, he had told me. Thousands. Keep moving, I urged myself. Keep moving, Gabe. They're right up ahead. They've got to be. I took a few steps, then called out to them. I heard something. Voices? I stopped. It was so quiet now. So quiet I could hear my heart pounding in my chest. The sound again. I listened hard, holding my breath. It was a chattering sound, a soft cluttering, not a human voice. An insect, maybe? Or a rat? Uncle Ben! Sorry! Silence. I took a few more steps into the tunnel, then a few more. I decided I'd better forget my pride and beep them. So what if Sorry teased me about it? I was too frightened to care. If I beat them, they'd be right there to get me in a few seconds. But as I reached to my waist for the beeper, I was startled by a loud noise. The insect chattering became a soft, cracking sound. I stopped to listen, the fear rising in my throat. The soft cracking grew louder. It sounded like someone breaking saltines in two, only louder, louder, louder! Right under my feet, I turned my eyes to the floor. I shined my light at my shoes. It took me so long to realize what was happening. The ancient tunnel floor was cracking apart beneath me. The cracking grew louder, seemed to come from all directions, to surround me. By the time I realized what was happening, it was too late. I felt as if I were being pulled down, sucked down by a powerful force. Gravity, motherfucker! The floor crumbled away beneath me, and I was falling, falling down, down, down in an endless black hole. Ooh, I need to write that in my live journal poetry. Falling down, down, down an endless black hole. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. My hands flew up and grabbed nothing. I closed my eyes and fell down, down into the swirling blackness. It's official. I'm actually going to go bring this to a poetry reading. Can I reread this part? Do you mind? The cracking grew louder, seemed to come from all directions to surround me. By the time I realized what was happening, it was too late. I felt as if I were being pulled down, sucked down by a powerful force. The floor crumbled away beneath me, and I was falling. Falling down, down, down an endless black hole. I opened my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. My hands flew up and grabbed nothing. I closed my eyes and fell down, down into the swirling blackness. A poem by R.L. Stine. Chapter 12. I heard the flashlight clang against the floor. Then I hit hard. I landed on my side. Pain shot through my body and I saw red. A flash of bright red that grew brighter and brighter until I had to close my eyes. I think the force of the blow knocked me out for a short while. When I opened my eyes, everything was a gray-yellow blur. My side ached. My right elbow throbbed in pain. I tried the elbow. It seemed to move okay. I sat up. The haze slowly began to lift, like a curtain slowly rising. Where was I? A sour smell invaded my nostrils. The smell of decay, of ancient dust, of death. The flashlight had landed beside me on the concrete floor. I followed its beam of light toward the wall and gasped. The light stopped on a hand, a human hand. Or was it? The hand was attached to an arm. The arm hung stiffly from an erect body. My hand trembling, I grabbed up the flashlight and tried to steady the light on the figure. It was a mummy, I realized, standing on its feet near the far wall. Eyeless, mouthless. The bandaged face seemed to stare back at me, tense and ready, as if waiting for me to make the first move. Chapter A Baker's Dozen. A mummy? The light darted over its featureless face. I couldn't steady my hand. My whole body was shaking, frozen in place, not able to move off the hard floor. I gaped at the frightened figure. I suddenly realized I was panting loudly, trying to calm myself. I sucked in a deep breath of the putrid air and held it in. The mummy stared blindly back at me. It stood stiffly, its arms hanging at its side. Why is it standing there like that? I wondered, taking another deep breath. The ancient Egyptians didn't leave their mummies standing at attention. Realizing that it wasn't moving forward to attack me, I began to feel a little calmer. Easy, Gabe. Easy, I said aloud, trying to steady the flashlight. I gripped so tightly in my hand. That was a weird cadence and tone. I coughed. The air was so foul, so old. Groaning from the pain in my side, I climbed to my feet and began rapidly shining the light back and forth beyond the silent, faceless mummy. I was in an enormous high-ceiling chamber, much bigger than the chamber Uncle Ben's workers had been digging in, and much more cluttered. Wow! I uttered a low cry as the pale light of the flashlight revealed an amazing scene. Dark, bandaged figures hovering all around me. The vast chamber was crammed with mummies. In the vast, unsteady light, their shadows seemed to reach toward me. Shuddering, I took a step back. I moved the light slowly over the strange, hideous scene. A light burned through the shadows, revealing bandaged arms, torsos, legs, covered faces. There were so many of them. There were mummies leaning against every wall, mummies lying on stone slabs, arms crossed over their chests, mummies leaning at odd angles, crouched low or standing tall, their arms straight out in front of them like a Frankenstein's monster. Against one wall stood a row of mummy cases, their lids propped open. I turned, following the arc of my light. I realized that my fall had dropped me into the center of the room. Behind me, I could make out an amazing array of equipment, strange, prong-like tools I had never seen before, tall stacks of cloth, gigantic clay pots and jars. Easy, Gabe. Easy. Whoa. Breathe slowly. I took a few reluctant steps closer, trying to hold the flashlight steady. A few more steps. I walked up to one of the tall stacks of cloth, linen most likely, the material used for making mummies. Gathering my courage, I examined some of the tools, not touching anything, just staring at them in the wavering light of the flashlight. Mummy-making tools. Ancient mummy-making tools. I stepped away, turned back towards the crowd of unmoving features. My light traveled across the room and came to rest on a dark square area on the floor. Curious, I moved closer, stepping around twin mummies laying on their backs, their arms crossed over their chest. Whoa! Easy, Gabe. My sneakers scraped noisily along the floor as I made my way hesitantly across the vast chamber. The dark square on the floor was nearly the size of a swimming pool. I bent down at its edge to examine it more closely. The surface was soft and sticky, like tar. Was this an ancient tar pit? Was this tar used in making mummies? The mummies that hovered so menacingly around the room? I had a sudden chill that froze me on the spot. How could this tar pit be soft after 4,000 years? Why was everything in this chamber, the tools, the mummy, the linen, preserved so well? And why were these mummies, at least 24 of them, left out like this, scattered about the room in such strange positions? I realized that I had made an incredible discovery here. By falling through the floor, I had found a hidden chamber, a chamber where mummies had been made. I had found all the tools and all the materials used to make mummies 4,000 years ago. Once again, the sour smell invaded my nose. I held my breath to keep myself from gagging. It was the smell of 4,000-year-old bodies, I realized. A smell that I had been bottled up in this ancient hidden chamber until now. A smell that had been bottled up in this ancient chamber until now. A smell that had been bottled up in this ancient hidden chamber until now. Staring at the twisted, shadowy figures gazing back at me in the faceless horror, I reached for the beeper. Uncle Ben, you must come quickly, I thought. I don't want to be alone down here any longer. You must come here now. I pulled the beeper off my belt and brought it up close to the light. All I had to do, I realized, was push the button, and Uncle Ben and Sari would come running. Gripping the small square tightly in my hand, I moved my hand to the button and cried out in alarm. The beeper was ruined, wrecked, smashed! The button wouldn't even push. I must have landed on it when I fell. It was useless. I was all alone down here, alone with the ancient mummies, staring facelessly, silently at me through the deep, dark shadows. Chapter 14. All alone, I stared in horror at the worthless beeper. The flashlight trembled in my hand. Suddenly, everything seemed to move in on me. The walls, the ceiling, the darkness, the mummies. Huh? I stumbled back a step, then another. I realized I was gripping the flashlight so tightly my hand hurt. The light played over the faceless figure. They weren't moving. Of course they weren't moving. I took another step back. The sour odor seemed to grow stronger, thicker. I held my breath, but the smell was in my nostrils, in my mouth. I could taste it, taste the decay, taste the 4,000-year-old aroma of death. I tossed the worthless beeper on the floor and took another step back, keeping my eyes on the hovering mummies. What was I gonna do? The smell was making me sick. I had to get out of there. I had to call Uncle Ben. Another step back. Help! I tried to shout, but my voice sounded weak, muffled by the heavy, foul air. Help! Can anybody hear me? A little louder. Tucking the flashlight under my arm, I cut my hands around my mouth to form a megaphone. Can anybody hear me? I screamed. I listened, desperate for a reply. Silence. Where were Sari and Uncle Ben? Why couldn't they hear me? Why weren't they looking for me? Help! Somebody! Please help! I screamed as loud as I could, tilting my head up to the hole in the ceiling, the hole I had fallen through. Can anybody hear me? I shrieked. I could feel the panic grip my chest, freeze my legs. The panic swept over me, wave after paralyzing wave. Help me! Somebody! Please! I took another step back, and something crunched under my sneaker. I uttered a high-pitched yelp and stumbled forward. Whatever it was slithered away. I exhaled loudly, a long sigh of relief. And then I felt something brush against my ankle. I cried out, and the flashlight dropped from under my arm. It clattered noisily to the floor. The light went out. Again, something scraped silently against me, something hard. I heard soft, scrabbling sounds down on the floor. Something snapped at my ankle. I kicked hard, but hit only air. Oh, help! There were creatures down here, a lot of them, but what were they? Again, something slapped at my ankle. I kicked wildly, frantically. I bent down, grabbing for the flashlight in the darkness, and touched something hard and warm. Oh, no! I jerked my hand up with a startled cry. In the darkness, groping for the flashlight, I had the feeling that the entire floor had come to life. The floor was moving in waves, rolling and tossing, seething beneath me. And finally, I found the flashlight. I grabbed it up in my trembling hand, climbed to my feet, and struggled to turn it back on. As I stepped backward, something slid against my leg. It felt hard and prickly. I heard clicking sounds, snapping, creatures bumping into each other, panting loudly, my chest heaving, my entire body gripped with terror. I jumped up, tried to dance away. As I fiddled with the flashlight, something crunched loudly beneath my sneaker. I danced away, hopping over something that scuttled through my legs. Finally, the light flickered on. My heart thudding, I lowered the yellow beam of light in the floor. I saw the scrabbling, snapping creatures, scorpions! I had stumbled into a disgusting nest of them. Oh, help! I didn't realize my tiny, frightened voice as I cried out. I didn't even realize as I had cried out. The light darted over the slithering creatures, their tails raised as if ready to attack, their claws snapping silently as they moved. Crawling over each other, slithering past my ankle. Somebody help! I leapt backward as a pair of claws grabbed at the leg of my jeans. into another of the creatures whose tail snapped against the back of my sneaker, suddenly trying to escape, struggling from the poisonous creatures I tripped. No, please, no. I couldn't save myself. I started to fall. My hand shot out, but there was nothing to grab onto. I was going to plunge right into the middle of them. No! I uttered a frantic cry as I toppled forward. I felt two hands grab me by the shoulders from behind. Chapter 15. A mummy, I thought. My entire body convulsed with fear. The scorpion snapped and scrambled at my feet. The strong hands gripped my shoulders, pulled me hard. The ancient bandaged hands. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think. Finally, I managed to spin around. Sorry, I cried. She gave me one more tug. We both stumbled backwards, claws snapping up at us. Sorry, how? We moved together now, making our way towards the center of the vast chamber. Safe. Safe from the disgusting nest of snapping scorpions. Saved your life, she whispered. Yuck, those are gross. Tell me about it, I said weakly. Heyo, it is now April 28th. I am not into this book at all. I've been horribly depressed. There's so much terrible shit going on, let me tell you that much. But I honestly don't even plan on finishing tonight. I'm kind of drunk and it's 11. God damn it. I need to be, God fucking gotta be up at 7:30 in the goddamn morning. Tell me about it, I said weakly. I could still feel the hideous creatures sliding along my ankles. Still feel them slithering between my legs, crunching under my sneakers. I don't think I'll ever forget that crunching sound. What are you doing down here? Sorry cried impatiently, as if scolding a child. Daddy and I have been looking everywhere for you. I pulled her even farther from the scorpions, into the center of the chamber. How did you get down here? I cried, struggling to calm my breathing, struggling to stop the pounding in my chest. She pointed with her flashlight to a tunnel in the corner that I hadn't even seen. I was searching for you. Daddy and I got separated. Do you believe it? He stopped to talk to a worker, and I didn't realize it. By the time I turned back, he was gone. Then I saw the light moving around in here. I thought it was Daddy. You got lost too? I asked, wiping beads of cold sweat off my forehead with the back of my hand. I'm not lost. You're lost, she insisted. How could you do that, Gabe? Daddy and I were totally freaked. Why didn't you wait for me? I demanded angrily. I called you. You disappeared. We didn't hear you, she replied, shaking her head. I was really glad to see her, but I hated the way she was looking at me, like I was some kind of hopeless idiot. I guess we got involved in our argument. We thought you were right behind us, then we turned around and you were gone. She sighed and shook her head. What a day! What a day! I cried shrilly. What a day! Gabe, why did you do that? She demanded. You know we were supposed to stay close together. Hey, it wasn't my fault, I insisted angrily. Daddy is so mad, Sari said, shining her light in my face. I raised my arm to shield my eyes. Cut it out, I snapped. He won't be mad when he sees what I've discovered. Look. I shined my light onto a mummy crouching near the tar pit, then moved it to another mummy. This one was lying down, then to the row of mummy cases against the wall. Wow! Sari mouthed the word silently. Sari. Wow! Her eyes grew wide with surprise. Yeah, wow, I said, starting to feel a little more like normal. The chamber is filled with mummies, and there are all kinds of tools and cloth and everything you need to make a mummy. It's all in perfect shape, like it hasn't been touched in thousands of years. I couldn't hide my excitement, and I discovered it all, I added. This must be where they prepared the mummies for burial, Sari said, her eyes darting from mummy to mummy. But why are some of them standing up like that? I shrugged. Beats me. She walked over to admire the stacks of neatly folded linen. Wow, this is amazing, Gabe. Outstanding, I agreed. And if I hadn't stopped to tie my sneaker, I would have never discovered it. You're going to be famous, Sari said, a smile spreading across her face. Thanks to me saving your life. Sorry, I started. But she had moved across the room and was admiring one of the upright mummies close up. Wait till Daddy sees all this, she said, suddenly sounding as excited as me. We have to call him, I said eagerly. I glanced back at the scorpion nest and felt a chill of fear tighten the back of my neck. People were so tiny back then, she said, holding her flashlight up close to the mummy's covered face. Look, I'm taller than this one. Sorry. Use your beeper, I said, impatiently walking over to her. Yuck! These bugs are crawling in this one's face, she said, stepping back and lowering the light. She made a disgusted face. Gross! Come on, use your beeper. Call Uncle Ben, I said. I reached for the beeper at her waist, but she pulled away. Okay, okay. Why didn't you use yours? She eyed me suspiciously. You forgot about it, didn't you, Gabe? She accused me. No way, I replied sharply. Mine broke when I fell through the fucking ceiling. She made a face and pulled the beeper off her belt loop. I shined my light on it as she pushed the button. She pressed it twice, just to make sure, then clipped it back to her jeans. She stood with her arms crossed, waiting for Uncle Ben to follow the radio signals and find us. It shouldn't take him long, Sari said, her eyes on the tunnel in the corner. He wasn't far behind me. Sure enough, a few seconds later, we heard the sounds of someone approaching the tunnel. Uncle Ben! I cried excitedly. Look what I found! Sari and I both started to run to the tunnel, our light zigzagging over the low entrance. Daddy, you won't believe! Sari started. She stopped when the stooped figure leaned out of the darkness and straightened up. We both gagged. Sorry, I think I was speaking Klingon for a second. We both gaped in horror, our flashlights making his mustache face glow eerily. It's Ahmed! Sari cried, grabbing my arm. Chapter 16. I'm drinking a 40-ounce malt beverage in the style of the King Cobra. Chapter 16. I swallowed hard. Sari and I stared at each other. I saw her features tighten in fear. Ahmed! He had tried to kidnap us, and now he was... And now he had us all alone down here. He stepped forward, a naming torch held in one hand. Okay, seriously? First off, I understand me mumbling like 2 seconds prior to this is my fault, but the a naming torch, that's what it says here. It's a flaming torch, okay, R.L. Stein? A flaming torch held high in one hand. His black hair glowed in the flickering flames. His eyes narrowed at us in menace. Ahmed, what are you doing here? Sari called, grasping my arm so tight, I winced. What are you doing here? He asked softly, his voice as cold as his eyes. Holding the torch in front of him, he stepped into the chamber. His eyes went around the room, as if inspecting it, making sure that nothing had been moved. My dad will be here in a second, Sari warned him. I just beeped him. I tried to warn your father, Ahmed said, staring hard at Sari. The flickering orange light from the torch made him grow brighter. Then fade into the shadow. Warn him, Sari asked, about the curse, Ahmed said without emotion. About the curse? Uncle Ben mentioned some kind of curse to me, I said, glancing nervously at Sari. I don't think he takes that kind of thing seriously. He should, Ahmed replied, screaming the words, his eyes glowing with anger in the torchlight. Sari and I stared back at him in silence. Where is Uncle Ben? I wondered. What's keeping him? Hurry, I urged silently. Please, hurry. The curse must be carried out, Ahmed said softly, again, almost sadly. I have no choice. You have violated the priestess's chamber. Priestess? I stammered. Priestess? I stammered effeminately. Sari was still squeezing my arm. I tugged it away. She crossed her arms resolutely. Yeah, suck on that, big words. You know I like to keep it monosyllabic. She crossed her arms resolutely over her chest. "This chamber belongs to the priestess Kala," Ahmed said, lowering the torch. "This is one of the sacred preparation chambers of the priestess Kala, and you have violated it." "Well, we didn't know," Sari snapped. "I really don't see what the big deal is, Ahmed." "She's right," I said quickly. "We didn't touch anything. We didn't move anything. I don't think..." "Shut up, you fools!" Ahmed screamed. He swung the torch angrily as if trying to hit us. "Ahmed, my dad will be here any second," Sari repeated, her voice trembling. We both turned our eyes to the tunnel. It was dark and silent. No sign of Uncle Ben. "Your father is a smart man," Ahmed said. "It is too bad he wasn't smart enough to heed my warnings." "Warnings?" Sari asked. I realized she was stalling for time, trying to keep Ahmed talking until Uncle Ben arrived. "I frightened the two workers," Ahmed confessed to Sari. "I frightened them to show your father that the curse was alive, that I was prepared to carry out Kala's wishes." "How did you frighten them?" Sari demanded. He smiled. "I gave them a little demonstration. I showed them what it might feel like to be boiled alive." He turned his eyes to the tar pit. "They didn't like it," he added quietly. "But Ahmed," Sari started. He cut her off. "Your father should have known better than to return here. He should have believed me. He should have believed in the priestess's curse. The priestess's curse. All the priestess curses the whole violator chamber. God, I'm so angry." "But come on. You don't really believe," I started. He raised the torch menacingly. "It was decreed by Kala more than 4,000 years ago that this chamber would not be violated," he cried, gesturing with a torch, leaving a trail of orange light against the darkness. "Since that time, from generation to generation, descendants of Kala have made sure that the priestess's command was obeyed." "But Ahmed," Sari cried. "It has come to me," he continued, ignoring her, ignoring both of us, staring at the ceiling as he spoke, as if speaking directly to the priestess up in the heavens. "It might have come to me as a descendant of Kala to make sure the curse is carried out." I stared past Ahmed to the tunnel. Still no sign of Uncle Ben. Was he coming? Had Sari's beeper worked? What was keeping him? "I volunteered to work for your father to make sure that Kala's sacred sanctuary was not violated," Ahmed continued, shadows flickering over his menacing face. "When he would not heed my warnings, I had to take action. I frightened the two workers, then I planned to take you away, to hide you until you agreed to stop his work." He lowered the torch, his face filled with sadness. "Now I have no choice. I must carry out my sacred duties. I must keep the ancient promise to Kala." "But what does that mean?" Sari cried. The orange torchlight revealed her frightened expression. "What does it mean?" Ahmed repeated. He gestured with a torch. "Look around you." We both turned and glanced quickly around the chamber, but we didn't understand. "The mummies," he explained. We still didn't understand. "What about the mummies?" I managed to stammer. "They were all violators of the priestess's chamber," Ahmed revealed. The thin smile that formed on his face could only be described as a proud smile. "You mean they're not from ancient Egypt?" Sari cried, raising her hands in horror to her face. "A few of them," Ahmed replied, still smiling that frightening, cold smile. "A few of them were ancient intruders, some of them quite recent, but they all had one thing in common. They all became victims of the curse, and they all were mummified alive."
"No!"
I screamed without realizing it. Ahmed ignored my terrified outburst. "I did that one myself," he said, pointing to a mummy standing stiffly at attention at the edge of the tar pit. Because he probably had a boner, stiffly at attention, like an erection.
"Oh, how awful!" Sari cried, her voice trembling.
I stared hopefully at the tunnel opening behind Ahmed, but there was still no sign of Uncle Ben.
"Today, I must go to work again, Ahmed announced. Today, there will be new mummies, new trophies for Kala.
You can't do that,
Sari shrieked. I grabbed her hand. To my horror, I understood perfectly now. I understood why some of the mummies were in such good condition. They were new. All the tools, the tar, the linen, they had been used by descendants of Kala, descendants like Ahmed. Since the time of Kala, anyone who would enter the chamber we were now standing in, had been mummified. Alive. And now Sari and I were about to become mummies too. Ahmed, you can't! Sari cried. She let go of my hand and balled her hands into angry fists at her side. It is the will of Kala, he repeated softly, his eyes glowing in the light of the torch. I saw a long bladed dagger appear in his free hand. The blade caught the light from the torch. Sari and I both took steps back as Ahmed began moving towards us with quick, determined strides. This is chapter 17. The 17th chapter of this book. As Ahmed approached, Sari and I shrank back to the center of the chamber. Run, I thought. We can run away from him. His eyes searched frantically for a place we could escape through, but there is no way out. The tunnel in the corner appeared to be the only opening, and we'd have to run right past Ahmed to get to it. Sari, I saw, was frantically pressing the beeper at her waist. She glanced at me, her features tight with fear. Yow! I cried out as I suddenly backed into someone. I turned and stared into the bandaged face of a mummy. With a loud gasp, I lurched away from it. Let's make a run for the tunnel, I whispered to Sari, my throat so dry and tight I could barely make myself heard. He can't get both of us. Sari stared back at me, confused. I don't know if she heard me or not. There is no escape, Ahmed said softly, as if reading my thoughts. There is no escape from Kala's curse.
He's going to kill us, Sari screamed.
You have violated her sacred chamber,
Ahmed said, raising the torch high, holding the dagger at his waist. He stepped nearer. I saw you yesterday climb into the sacred sarcophagus. I saw you two playing in Kala's holy chamber. It was then that I knew I had to carry out my sacred duties. Sari and I both cried out as something dropped from the chamber ceiling. All three of us looked up to see a rope ladder dangling from the hole I had fallen through. It swung back and forth as it was lowered, nearly to the floor. Are you down there? I'm coming down, Uncle Ben shouted to us. Uncle Ben, no! I screamed, but he was already moving down the ladder, making his way quickly, the ladder steadying under his weight. Halfway down, he stopped and peered in the chamber. What on earth? He cried, his eyes roaming over the amazing scene. And then he saw Ahmed. Ahmed, what are you doing here? Uncle Ben cried in surprise. He quickly lowered himself to the floor, jumping down the last three rungs. Merely carrying out Kala's wishes, Ahmed said, his face expressionless now. His eyes narrowed in intent and... Oh my god, I really think I might need to stop. His eyes narrowed in anticipation. Kala, the... priestess? Uncle Ben wrinkled his features in confusion.
He's going to kill us!
Sari cried, rushing up to her dad, throwing her arms around his waist.
Daddy, he's going to kill us and then turn us into mummies!
Uncle Ben held Sari and looked over her shoulder, accusingly at Ahmed. Is this true?
The chamber has been violated. It has fallen to me, Doctor, to carry out the curse.
Uncle Ben put his hands on Sari's trembling shoulders and gently moved her aside. Then he began to make his way slowly, steadily toward Ahmed. Ahmed, let us go out of here and discuss this, he said, raising his right hand as if offering it in friendship. Ahmed took a step back, raising the torch menacingly.
The priestess's will must not be ignored.
Ahmed, you're a scientist, so am I, Uncle Ben said. I couldn't believe how calm he was sounding. I wondered if it was an act. The scene was tense. We were in such terrifying danger, but I felt just a little bit calmer knowing that my uncle was here, knowing that he'd be able to handle Ahmed and get us out of here alive. I glanced reassuringly at Sari, who was staring hard, biting her lower lip in tense concentration as her father approached Ahmed. "Ahmed, put down the torch," Uncle Ben urged, his hand extended. "The dagger, too. Please. Let's discuss this. Scientist, to scientist." All right, seriously, I couldn't get scientist to scientist, so I'm quitting again. God damn, I really hope to finish this tomorrow night. I'm going through a lot of hard times, folks. So, don't be mean to me. Murderous out!
All right, murderous in. "What is there to discuss?" Ahmed said softly, his eyes studying Uncle Ben intently. "The will of Kala must be carried out, as it has been for 4,000 years. That cannot be discussed."
"As scientist to scientist," Uncle Ben repeated, returning Ahmed's stare as if challenging him. "The curse is ancient. Kala has had her way for many centuries. Perhaps it's time to let it rest. Lower your weapons, Ahmed. Let's talk about it. Scientist to scientist." "It's going to be okay," I thought, breathing a long sigh of relief. "It's all going to be okay. We're going to get out of here." But Ahmed moved with startling quickness. Without warning, without a word, he pulled back his arm and, gripping the torch handle with both hands, swung it as hard as he could at Uncle Ben's head. The torch made a loud thunk as it connected with the side of Uncle Ben's face. The orange flames danced up. The swirl of bright color was fucking bright. And the shadows. Uncle Ben groaned. His eyes bulged wide with surprise, with pain. The torch hadn't set him aflame, but the blow had knocked him out. He slumped to his knees. Then his eyes closed and he dropped limply to the floor. Ahmed raised the torch high, his eyes gleaming with excitement, with triumph. And I knew we were doomed. Chapter 18. "Daddy!" Sari rushed to her father and knelt at his side, but Ahmed moved quickly, thrusting the torch toward her, holding the dagger ready, forcing her to back away. A thin trickle of blood, glowing darkly, hit the light of the fire, rolling down the side of Uncle Ben's face. He groaned, but didn't stir. I glanced quickly at the mummies scattered around the room. It was hard to believe that we would soon be one of them. I thought of leaping at Ahmed, trying to knock him over. I imagined grabbing the torch, swinging it at him, forcing him against the wall, forcing him to let us escape. But the blade of the dagger glowed, as if it were warning me to stay back. "I'm just a kid," I thought. Thinking I could beat a grown man with a knife and a torch was just crazy. Crazy! The whole scene was crazy and terrifying. I suddenly felt sick. My stomach tightened. A wave of nausea swept over me. "Let us go! Wow!" Sari screamed at Ahmed. To my surprise, reacted by swinging back the torch and heaving it across the room. It landed with a soft plop in the center of the tar pit. Instantly, the surface of the tar pit burst into flames. The flames spread, leaping up toward the chamber ceiling until the entire square was aflame. As I stared in amazement, the tar popped and bubbled underneath the orange and red flames. "We must wait for it to boil," Ahmed said calmly, the shadows cast by the flames flickering across his face and clothing. The chamber grew thick with smoke. Sari and I both started to cough. Ahmed bent down and put his hands under Uncle Ben's shoulders. He began to drag him across the floor. "Leave him alone," Sari screamed, running frantically towards Ahmed. I saw that she was going to try to fight him. I grabbed her shoulders and held her back. We were no match for Ahmed. He had already knocked Uncle Ben unconscious. There was no telling what he would do to us. Holding on to Sari, I stared at him. What did he plan to do now? It didn't take long to find out. With surprising strength, he pulled Uncle Ben across the floor to one of the open mummy cases against the wall. Then he hoisted him over the side and shoved him into the case.
Not even the slightest bit out of breath, Ahmed slid the lid closed over my unconscious uncle. Then he turned to us. "You two, into that one." He pointed to an enormous mummy case on a tall pedestal next to Uncle Ben's. It was nearly as tall as I was, and at least 10 feet long. It must have been built to hold a mummified person and all of his or her possessions. "Let us go," Sari insisted. "Let us out of here. We won't tell anyone what happened, really."
"Please climb into the case," Ahmed insisted patiently. "We must wait for the tar to be ready."
"We're not going in there," I said. I was shaking all over. I could feel the blood pulsing at my temples. I didn't even realize I was saying what I was saying. I was so scared. I didn't even hear myself. I glanced at Sari. She stood defiantly with her arms crossed tightly over her chest. But despite her brave pose, I could see her chin trembling and her eyes beginning to tear.
"Into the coffin," Ahmed repeated, "to await your fate. Kala will not be kept waiting. The ancient curse will be carried out in her name."
"No!" I cried angrily. I stood on tiptoe and peered into the enormous mummy case. It smelled so sour in there, I nearly hurled. The case was made of wood. It was warped and stained and peeling inside. In the flickering light, I was sure I saw dozens of insects crawling around in there. "Get into the case now," Ahmed demanded.
Whew, this is heating up. All right, I'm going to finish it tonight. I have Wild Irish Rose on my side. It was 20 cents cheaper than Night Train.
Chapter 19. Sari climbed up over the side and lowered herself into the ancient mummy case. She always had to be the first at everything. But this was one time I didn't mind. I hesitated, resting my hand on the rotting wood on the side of the case. I glanced at the case next to it, the case with Uncle Ben inside. It was carved of stone, and the heavy stone lid was closed, sealing it up tight. Did Uncle Ben have any air in there? I wondered, gripped with fear. Was he able to breathe? And then I thought glumly, with what difference does it make? All three of us are going to be dead soon. All three of us are going to be made into mummies, locked away in this hidden chamber for fucking ever. "Get in now," Ahmed ordered, his dark eyes burning into mine.
I'm just a kid, I cried. "Really? Nice job, tough guy," I cried. I don't know where those words came from. I was so scared, I really didn't know what I was saying.
An unpleasant sneer formed on Ahmed's face.
"Many of the pharaohs at your... many of the pharaohs were your age at death."
I wanted to keep him talking. I had the desperate idea that if I could keep the conversation going, I could get us out of this mess. But I couldn't think of anything to say. My brain just froze.
You should lay off the Slurpees, Gabe. Like brain freeze. Oh man, I'm gonna write into Reader's Digest.
"Get in," Ahmed ordered, moving toward me menacingly. Feeling totally defeated, I slid one leg over the side of the rotting coffin, raised myself up, and then dropped down beside Sari. She had her head bowed and her eyes shut tight. I think she was praying. She didn't glance up. Even when I touched her shoulder, the coffin lid began to slide over us. The last thing I saw were the red flames leaping over the pit of tar. Then the lid closed us into complete blackness.
"Gabe," Sari whispered a few seconds after the lid was closed, "I'm frightened."
That's an understatement, because you're in a coffin and that guy's going to push you into some tar.
For some reason, her confession made me snicker. She said it with such surprise, as if being frightened was a startling new experience.
"I'm too frightened to be frightened," I whispered back.
She grabbed my hand and squeezed it. Her hand was even colder and clammier than mine. "He's crazy," she whispered.
"Yeah, I know," I replied, still holding onto her hand.
"I think there are bugs in here," she said with a shudder. "I can feel them crawling all over me."
"Me too," I told her. I realized I was gritting my teeth. I always do that when I'm nervous, and now I was more nervous than I thought was humanly possible.
Poor Daddy, Sari said. The air in the coffin was already beginning to feel stuffy and hot. I tried to ignore the disgusting sour smell, but it had crept into my nostrils. I could even taste it. I held my breath to keep from gagging. We're going to suffocate in here, I said glumly. He's going to kill us before we can suffocate. Sari wailed. Ow! I could hear her slap at a bug in her arm. Maybe something will happen, I told her. Pretty lame, but I couldn't think of anything else to say. I couldn't think, period. All I keep thinking about is how he's going to reach in and pull my brain out through my nose, Sari wailed. Why did you have to tell me that, motherfuckface? It took me a while to reply. Then, all I could say was, Sari. I began to picture the same thing, and another wave of nausea swept over me. We can't just sit here, I said. We have to escape. I tried to ignore the thick, sour smell. Huh? How? Let's try to push the lid, I said. Maybe if we both push together. I counted to three in a low whisper, and we both flattened our hands against the coffin top and pushed up as hard as we could. No, the lid wouldn't budge. Maybe he's locked it or put something heavy on top of it, Sari suggested with a miserable sigh. Maybe, I replied, feeling just as miserable. We sat in silence for a while. I could hear Sari breathing. She was sort of sobbing as she breathed. I realized my heart was racing. I could feel my temples throbbing. I pictured the long hook that Ahmed would use to pull our brains out of our heads. I tried to force the thought out of my mind, but it wouldn't go away. I remembered being a mummy two Halloweens ago and how the costume unraveled in front of my friends. I should have worn underwear. But a little part of me knew that I kind of wanted them to see. Wanted to see the, my little peenie. Little did I know that I'd soon have a mummy costume that would never unravel. Time passed. I don't know how long. I realized I'd been sitting with my legs crossed. Now they were beginning to fall asleep. I uncrossed them and stretched them out. The mummy case was so big. Sari and I could both lie down if we wanted to. But we were too tense and terrified to lie down. I'd just like to remind you there are many fucking typos are on this. Where it says Sari and I could both... I don't know. Point is, whatever I said before, there's so many typos. There's just capital he in the middle of that. It's just... It's a fucking clusterfuck. It really is. It's really hard to read, and I want some credit, okay? I think credit is due here. All right, more Wild Irish Rose. I was the first to hear the scrabbling sound, like something climbing around inside the mummy case. At first, I thought he was Sari, but she grabbed my hand with her icy hand, and I realized she hadn't moved from in front of me. We both listened hard. Something near us, something right next to us, bumped the side of the case. A mummy? Was there a mummy in the case with us? Moving? I heard a soft groan. Sari squeezed my hand so tightly it hurt. I uttered a sharp cry. Another sound. Closer. Gabe! Sari whispered, her voice tiny and shrill. Gabe, there's something in here with us! Chapter 20. It's not a mummy, I told myself. It can't be. It's a bug. A very fucking huge, large bug moving across the coffin floor. It's not a mummy. It's not a mummy. The words repeated in my mind. I didn't have too long to think about it. Whatever it was crept closer. Hey, a voice whispered. Sari and I both shrieked. Where are you guys? We recognized the voice immediately. Uncle Ben, I cried, swallowing hard, my heart pounding. Daddy! Sari lunged over me to get to her father. But how? I stammered. How did you get in here? Easy, he replied, squeezing my shoulder reassuringly. Daddy, I don't believe it, Sari wailed. I couldn't see in the blackness of the closed coffin, but I think she was crying. I'm okay, he repeated several times, trying to calm her down. How did you get out of that case and into this one? I asked, totally confused and amazed. There's an escape hatch, Uncle Ben explained. A small opening with a doorway. The Egyptians built hidden doorways and escape hatches into many of their mummy cases for the corpse's soul to be able to leave. Duh, you fucking morons. Wow, I said. I didn't know what to say. Ahmed is so caught up in his ancient curse, mumbo-jumbo, he's forgotten about this little detail, Uncle Ben said. I felt his hand on my shoulder again. Come on, you two, follow me. But he's out there, I started. No, Uncle Ben replied quickly. He slipped away. When I climbed out of my case, I looked for him. I didn't see him anywhere. Maybe he went somewhere else while he's waiting for the tar to get hot enough. Or maybe he decided to just leave us in the mummy cases to suffocate. I felt a bug slither up my leg. I slapped at it, then tried to pull it out from inside the leg of my jeans. Out we go, Uncle Ben said. I heard him groan as he turned into the enormous coffin. I heard him groan as he turned in the enormous coffin. That's a sentence enough. Then I could hear him crawling to the back. I saw a small rectangle of light as he pushed open the hidden door in the back of the case. It was a very small escape hatch, just big enough for us to squeeze through. I followed Uncle Ben and Sari out of the case, flattening myself to crawl out the small opening, then dropping onto all fours on the chamber floor. It took us a while for my eyes to adjust to the brightness. The red flame still danced over the pit of bubbling tar, casting eerie blue shadows on all four chamber walls. The mummies stood as before, frozen in place around the room, shadows flickering over their faceless forms. As my eyes began to focus, I saw that Uncle Ben had an enormous dark bruise on the side of his head. A wide ribbon of dried blood streaked down his cheek. Let's get out of here before Ahmed comes back, he whispered, standing between us, one hand on each of our shoulders. Sari looked pale and trembly. Her lower lip was bleeding from her chewing on it so hard. Uncle Ben started toward the rope ladder in the center of the chamber, but then stopped. It'll take too long, he said, thinking out loud. Come on, to the tunnel. Hurry! All three of us started jogging toward the tunnel in the corner. Looking down, I saw that my stupid shoelace had come untied again, but there is no way I was going to stop to tie it. We were about to get out of here. A few seconds before, I had given up all hope, but now, here we were, out of the mummy case and heading to freedom. We were just a few yards in front of the tunnel entrance when the tunnel suddenly filled with an orange light. Then, from out of the tunnel, Ahmed emerged, holding a new torch in front of him, the flames revealing a startled look in his face. No! Sari and I cried in unison. All three of us skidded to a halt right in front of him.
You cannot escape, Ahmed said softly, quickly regaining his composure. His startled expression tightened to anger. You will not escape.
That was you mill not escape, how it was written, M-I-L, but I'm assuming it's
you will not escape.
He thrust the torch toward Uncle Ben, who was forced to fall backwards out of reach of his hissing flames. He landed hard on his elbows and cried out in pain. His cry brought a grim smile to Ahmed's lips.
You have made Kala angry, he announced, raising the torch above his head, reaching for the dagger sheathed at his waist. You will not join the other violators of this chamber.
Oh, I breathed a sigh of relief. Ahmed changed his mind. He wasn't going to turn us into mummies after all.
The three of you will die in the tar pit, he declared.
Fuck, that's much worse. Sari and I exchanged horrified glances. Uncle Ben had climbed back to his feet and put his arms around us. Ahmed, can't we talk about this calmly and rationally as a scientist? He asked.
To the tar pit!
Ahmed ordered, thrusting the flaming torch angrily at us. Ahmed, please! Uncle Ben cried in a whining, frightened tone I'd never heard him use before. Ahmed ignored Uncle Ben's desperate pleas, pushing the torch at our backs and gesturing with the long-bladed dagger. He forced us to make our way to the edge of the tar pit. The tar was bubbling noisily now, making ugly popping and sucking and licking and fucking sounds. The flames across the top were slow and low and red. I tried to pull back. It smelled so bad, and the steam coming off of it was so hot, it made my face burn.
One by one, you will jump,
Ahmed said. He was standing a few feet behind us as we stared down into the bubbling tar.
If you don't jump, I will be forced to push you.
Ahmed, Uncle Ben began, but Ahmed brushed the torch against Ben's back. Just kidding, you're being punked. Okay, I'm Dax Shepard. You know, that was... Fuck, Dune, that was... First off, I was going to say it was a topical joke, but that
That show's like more than a decade old. Ashton Kutcher's socially irrelevant. He's only known for his Twitter account now, which anyone can get. I mean, you can follow me at twitter.com/Dune, but man, what was I thinking on that joke? I really dropped the ball, guys. I'm sorry.
It has come to me, Ahmed said solemnly, the honor of carrying out Kala's wishes. The tar fumes were so overwhelming, I thought I was going to faint. The pit started to tilt in front of me. I felt very dizzy. I shoved my hands into my jeans pocket to steady myself, I guess, and my hand closed around something I had forgotten about. The summoner. The mummy hand that I carried around everywhere. I'm not sure why. I wasn't thinking clearly, if at all, but I pulled out my little mummy hand. I spun around quickly, and I held the mummy hand up high. I can't really explain what was going through my mind. I was so terrified, so overwhelmed with fear, that I was thinking 100 things at once. Maybe I thought the mummy hand would distract Ahmed, or interest him, or confuse him, or frighten him. Maybe I was just stalling for time. Or maybe I was unconsciously remembering the legend behind the hand that the kid at the garage sale had told me. The legend of why it was called the Summoner. How it was used to call up ancient souls and spirits. Or maybe I wasn't thinking anything at all. But I spun around and, gripping it by its slender wrist, I held the mummy hand up high and waited. Ahmed stared at it. But nothing happened. Chapter 21. I waited, standing there like the Statue of Liberty, with the little hand raised high above my head. It seemed as if it were standing like that for hours. Sari and Uncle Ben stared at the hand. Lowering the torch a few inches, Ahmed squinted at the mummy hand. Then his eyes grew wider, and his mouth dropped open in surprise. He cried out. I couldn't understand what he was saying. The words were in a language I'd never heard. Ancient Egyptian, maybe. He took a step back. His surprised expression quickly replaced by a wide-eyed look of fear. The hand of the priestess, he cried. At least, that's what I think he cried, because I was suddenly distracted by what was going on behind him. Sari uttered a low cry. All three of us stared over Ahmed's shoulders in disbelief. A mummy propped against the wall appeared to lean forward. Another mummy, lying on its back, slowly sat up, creaking as it raised itself. No! I cried, still holding the mummy's hand high. Sari and Uncle Ben were gaping wide-eyed at the vast chamber filled with emotion as the mummies creaked and groaned to life, the air filled with the odor of ancient dust of decay. In the shadowy light, I saw one mummy, then another, straighten up, stand tall. They stretched out their bandaged arms over their featureless heads, slowly, painfully. Staggering, moving stiffly, the mummies lumbered forward. I watched, frozen in amazement, as they climbed out of the mummy cases, raised themselves from the floor, leaned forward, took their first slow, heavy steps, their muscles groaning, dust rising from their dry, dead bodies. They're dead, I thought. All of them. Dead. Dead for so many years. But now they were rising up, climbing from their ancient coffins, struggling towards us on their heavy dead legs, their bandaged feet scraping across the chamber floor as they gathered in a group. Scrape. 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 Goose, hear it? No, I'm just kidding, it just said scrape. A dry shuffling sound. I knew I'd never forget. Scrape. Scrape. The faceless army approached, bandaged arms outstretched. They lumbered towards us, creaking and groaning, moaning softly with ancient pain. Ahmed caught the astonishment on our faces and spun around. He cried out again in that strange language as he saw the mummies advancing towards us, scraping so softly, so deliberately across the chamber floor. And then, with a furious scream, Ahmed heaved the torch at the mummy in the lead. The torch hit the mummy in the chest and bounced to the floor. Flames burst from the mummy's chest, immediately spreading over the arms and down the legs. But the mummy kept advancing, didn't slow, didn't react at all to the fire that was quickly consuming it. Gaping in open-mouthed horror, babbling an endless stream of words in that mysterious language, Ahmed tried to run, but he was too late.
The burning mummy lunged at him. The ancient figure caught Ahmed up by the throat, lifted him high above its flaming shoulders. Ahmed uttered a high-pitched shriek of terror as the other mummies lumbered forward, moaning and wailing through their yellow bandages. They moved in to help their burning colleague. They raised Ahmed high above their moaning heads and then held him over the burning tar pit. Squirming and kicking, Ahmed uttered a piercing scream as they held him over the boiling, bubbling, steaming tar. I closed my eyes. The heat and tar fumes swirled around me. I felt as if I were being swallowed up, pulled down into the steaming blackness. When I opened my eyes, I saw Ahmed fleeing to the tunnel, staggering clumsily, shrieking in open-mouthed terror as he ran. The mummies remained by the pit, enjoying their victory. I realized I was still holding the mummy hand over my head. I lowered it slowly and gazed at Sari and Uncle Ben. They were standing beside me, their faces filled with confusion and relief. "The mummies," I managed to utter. "Look," Sari said, pointing. I followed the direction of her gaze. The mummies were all back in place. Some were leaning, some propped at odd angles, some lying down. They were exactly as they had been when we entered the chamber. "Huh?" My eyes darted rapidly around the room. Had they all moved? Had they raised themselves, stood up, and staggered towards us? Or had we imagined it all? No, we couldn't have imagined it. Ahmed was gone, and we were safe. "We're okay," Uncle Ben said gratefully, throwing his arms around Sari and me. "We're okay. We are okay. We can go now," Sari cried happily, hugging her dad. Then she turned to me. "You saved our lives," she said. She had to choke out the words, but she said them. Then Uncle Ben turned his gaze on me and the object I still gripped tightly in front of me. "Thanks for the helping hand," Uncle Ben said. "Helping hand, because it's a mummy hand that he coincidentally bought at a garage sale. And that's what saved their lives." We had an enormous dinner at the restaurant back in Cairo. It's a miracle any of us got any food down since we're all talking at once, chattering excitedly, reliving our adventure, trying to make sense of it all. I was spinning the summoner around on the table. Uncle Ben grinned at me. I had no idea how special that mummy hand was. He took it from me and examined it closely. "Better not play with it," he said seriously. "We must treat it carefully." He shook his head. "Some great scientist I am," he exclaimed scornfully. "When I saw it, I thought it was just a toy, some kind of reproduction. But this hand may be the biggest discovery of all." "It's my good luck charm," I said, handling it gently as I took it back. "You can say that again," Sari said appreciatively, the nicest thing she'd ever said to me. "Really? You can say that again" was the nicest thing she... Huh. You guys have a horrible relationship. Back at the hotel, I surprised myself by falling asleep instantly. I thought I'd be up for hours thinking about all that had happened, but I guess all the excitement had exhausted me. The next morning, Sari, Uncle Ben, and I had a big breakfast in the room. I had a plate of scrambled eggs and a bowl of frosted flakes. They're fucking expensive. That's a Mitch Hedberg joke. Because he bought them at a mini bar. Do you remember that Mitch Hedberg joke? I do. I saw Mitch Hedberg live like 2 months before he died. That was kind of cool. One time I saw Morrissey live. I like Morrissey. As I ate, I fiddled with the little mummy hand. All three of us were feeling good, happy that our frightening adventure was over. We were kidding around, teasing each other, laughing a lot. After I finished my cereal, I raised the little mummy hand high.
"Oh, summoner," I chanted in a deep voice. "I summon the ancient spirits. Come alive again."
"Stop it, Gabe," Sari snapped. She grabbed for the hand, but I swung it out of her reach. "That isn't funny," she said. "You shouldn't fool around like that." "Are you chicken?" I asked, laughing at that dumb bitch. I could see she was really frightened, which made me enjoy my little joke even more. Keeping it away from her, I raised the hand high.
I summon the ancient spirits of the dead. I chanted, come to me, come on me now. And there was a loud knock on the door. All three of us gasped. Uncle Ben knocked over his juice glass. It clattered onto the table and spilled. I froze with the little hand in the air. Another loud knock. We heard a scrabbling at the door. The sound of ancient bandaged fingers struggling with the lock. Sari and I exchanged horrified glances. I slowly lowered the hand as the door swung open. Two shadowy figures lumbered in the room.
Mom and Dad! I cried. I'll bet they were surprised at how glad I was to see them.
Wow, the end.
I really do want to, talk about some stuff. Like, first off, I really do want to thank Alex for, hosting this and making the little website and, posting it on the internets and trying to get some hits and stuff. But, like, no one is going to listen this far. This was terrible. I feel like this is the first of the, R.L. Stine just having his books ghostwritten by strange other writers, because... Not that R.L. Stine has very high standards to begin with, but this is not up to his standards. And I promise from now on, when I read the books, I'll read half of a book in a night as opposed to trying to do it again and again. But, man, this one was awful. I apologize. I don't think anyone's going to listen to this. I might as well just give out my social security number. It's 558. I'm just, God, I hate my life. Stay spooky, bitches!